Okay, silence outside.
Sound. Rolling. Camera. Rolling. Yeah. Kill. Kill. Yeah. Action.
Have I made it yet?
Hi. You're listening to Have I Made It Yet? I'm your host, Ashwin Rajshekar, and I work as a sound engineer based out of Hyderabad. This podcast features candid conversations with various professionals from the world of filmmaking. They come from various departments with different experiences of the industry and their own unique stories to narrate. In this episode of the podcast, we're joined by Anusha Rao, a writer-director from Hyderabad who started her film career working in the marketing team of Arka Media on films like Bahubali The Beginning and Upiri, among others. She did her master's at Los Angeles Film School, and after graduation, she's been working as writer and director. Two of her projects currently undergoing post-production are Swarna, a short film that she has directed, and Stand Up Rahul, a Telugu feature film that she co-wrote.
So just a little bit about myself. My name is Anusha, based in Hyderabad. I was born and brought up here. My schooling, college, engineering happened here, unfortunately. That happened. And right after that, I had a deal with my dad, like, I want to do my thing after. So he's like, what thing? So I said, I don't know. I'll figure it out in these 4 years. And then you have to let me do it. So he said, cool, you do your thing, I'll do my thing.
This deal was like before you did your engineering?
Yeah. Hmm. So I wasn't sure myself to justify anything. So I took that time, met people and everything. And there was some direction that I was going towards, which was writing and something with film that really interested me. So my first ever job where I was getting paid at was at Arka. Arka Media Works, which produced Bahubali and Vedam and all these movies. So that was the first ever job, and that was more like a startup, even though it was an already established company. Startup in terms of a company doing its own marketing while producing the film. It was very interesting because everyone were learning at the same time. So there was no hierarchy system. Everyone were trying to figure out what digital marketing is, what is paid marketing, what is print marketing, everything together. These are already there in the textbook of, you know, marketing and stuff. But just doing it and executing it was something very interesting. My job to begin with, the first job ever, was where all can the film release outside of India? Figuring out the smallest towns in Italy or Africa. Indians are everywhere. Like, not just our population in India, but even outside. So figuring out where it should release, and everyone is homesick outside of India, right? So this was a movie that actually brought everyone together. And
which movie?
Bahubali, the first part.
Hmm.
Yeah, so Arka happened and joined that, and it was very exciting and fresh, I think, for everybody who was working there, because everyone were learning at the same time, so there was no hierarchy system. So even the boss was like listening to the intern, and the intern could just walk into the boss's room and just give out an idea. So it was that kind of a environment, which was very new. And I assumed, you know, film production house will have a completely different kind of aura going on. So this really broke out all those stereotypes for me. So I worked there for 4 years. So worked on Bahubali 1 and a couple of Telugu movies like Upiri and Sogarichini Naina and several others like these. Like, just creating marketing strategies was like the part of my job. Bahubali also, we went a little ahead and went on to Comic-Con. So it was all the cities in India which has Comic-Con going, all the metropolitan cities. So making sure like what kind of strategies would work for people who respect and look up to superheroes. So why don't we make Bahubali and Ballal Deva as superheroes and make them like a digital comic heroes? So that was something new. And creating hashtags itself, that I've never even looked at in my life. And somebody says they're paying you for this, so we could go all the way out. And we never heard the phrase, there's no budget right now for this. So that was one amazing thing, because the budget was flexible for that film. Just the whole post, like how they did it out of the box. You know, literally, we just came up with the idea that let's make the biggest statue of Bahubali. And that's what the second film is about. Rana wanting a bigger statue for himself. So we thought, why don't we make a statue in one of these Comic-Cons and put that in the Guinness record? And that happened. So there was literally no control of imagination. It is a very fortunate project and comes with a lot of benefits that way.
So you joined ARCA immediately after engineering?
No, so I interned at a company. It was like a sales and marketing company. That was just to understand and get a job, do like a 9-to-5 kind of thing. Get like discipline into my life, I think. Because engineering, there is no discipline. Third and fourth year, you hardly go to classes. So I think I needed a job like that. And then ARCA happened after a year.
Okay, so this is actually quite unexpected because I came in here expecting to talk more about writing and directing, which we will get to. But marketing is something that I haven't explored on this podcast. So you worked on 3 films and you have worked on a very high budget film, something like Bahubali, and then something that could be called a medium budget. So do you think you have an idea as to, you know, what the marketing could be like? What process would be ideal for an indie film, given the budget constraints and in terms of even the popularity of actors, it's limited. So with all those things, how do you get the best out of it?
Basically, like, you know, using all the platforms available, firstly, that is the organic way, right? Just utilizing them to the fullest. Like, what are these startups even made of? Instagram is just photographs to begin with. Twitter is words, hashtags. So just understanding the platforms and doing something more relatable to the audience. Like figuring out the theme of your story and making your marketing about that. For example, Bahubali was all about why did Kattappa kill Bahubali? And that hashtag ran for months together. It got people's attention for months, knowing how our generation is losing interest also these days. Their scope of, you know, minutes is going lesser. They want the twist immediately into the story. So knowing that, stretching out the concentration level and interest for a film. For example, if you're doing a film about stand-up, which is what I worked on recently, that would be very interesting if they asked people to do stand-up. You know, do like a 1-minute stand-up. Now, TikToks are happening. So why not like a reel of something funny? Things like that. Like very simple, organic, less priced marketing techniques. Make it like they are getting themselves involved in the film. They are like part of it. Make a competition. If you're making a movie about poetry, ask them to write a poem for you. Make your protagonist read it out on their Instagram. Things like this. Very simple things work. Not over the top, especially for an independent film, like you're saying, a lower budget, a medium budget. So something more, I think, simple is what will be more appreciated.
But also, do you feel like it might not necessarily always work?
It might not, definitely. Like, it also depends on the cast and crew and how active they are. We have some actors in South who don't at all use Instagram and Twitter. You can see somebody else is typing for them. It's not even personal, not even one bit. Even from the casting point of view, if you get someone looking through the marketing point of view, or if your story is strong enough where you don't need famous people, you need newcomers, then you have to make sure your marketing is more towards, you know, like the story wise, like getting people more into it, like participating competitions, like I said. It's not particular that everyone has to be famous in the film. It can go the other way around as well.
But if there is no one famous in the film, would you say that it kind of increases the budget for marketing?
Yeah, I mean, it has to. If they're using like paid marketing, like radio or posters on the street, all these things, they charge a lot. One street on Jubilee Hills is like worth lakhs. A newspaper article and radio, I've recently read that it's 60 rupees per second for 98.3. So getting like a 1 minute of it is like quite a price. But even those, the lesser time you get, the more information you need to put out there. If you're getting a small space on a newspaper, it has to be a question. So people look into it, you know, that kind of a thing. And create an interesting hashtag. I think that kind of works. I've learned that from Bahubali, like knowing the technology we are in right now. We are looking at hashtags more than, you know, headlines these days. So those things really work. So we need to take advantage.
Especially I feel like things that don't allow exactly what they are, but rather create a curiosity that kind of ends up trending more.
Definitely. I think, I don't know for which movie this was, but it was like a story about a missing child or something. And their poster was a missing poster. So things like this, you know, that won't cost much.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Go into the theme of your story and make a marketing strategy around it. A missing thing or like a police complaint, something like that. It should be an FIR. Your poster itself should be an FIR. So things like that.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense. You also went to film school, right?
Yeah, so that was in Los Angeles. It's called the LA Film School. And I did my majors in writing and direction. That was like very interesting again. Like a different country and different kind of people. All these stereotypes I had in my head about how Japanese and Chinese and Mexican people are. All that just broke out for me. I think that's all I wanted to know. Yeah.
But like there's this whole, like if you look at the way people are in the industry, they look at a film school person like, oh, they had it easy. Did you face that at any point?
Yeah, people just assume that a film school person only knows the format of writing for some reason. Only they understand act one, act two, act three. Nowadays, everybody does, right? Like, it's literally all about experience. Even at the film school, we did have experience. Like, every week we were shooting something or the other. Where one day I was a boom operator to sound designer to editor. I never edit again. Like, I don't like editing. But I had to for that project. That experience is on a different level because you're not getting paid for that. But when you're getting paid to do something, that pressure is different. You need to really know your skill and how good you are under pressure. That's an important task, which you don't get to. You can fail in a film school. Like, it's okay. You'll get through it in the next semester or next credits, whatever. But here it's different. When you're on set, under a payroll, things can be different in terms of your behavior.
When it comes to, you went to film school, and when it comes to, you know, writing, do you think this experience of editing and doing sound and directing and dabbling into every single department, has it helped you write in a more holistic manner?
Yeah, it definitely helped me write in an economic matter, for sure. If you're writing a scene about a guy on a bike and the actor and the actress or whoever, friends are having a conversation, I do think about, is that needed? If I'm using sync, if I'm using a boom operator, it's going to be extremely noisy on a bike with all that wind gushing through. So I do like to think about all the departments while writing myself, and also about the budget in mind. Do I really need them talking in a coffee shop? They can just meet up at their terrace, which is a friend's house. Maybe I can make that happen. If the dialogue is important, location is not. In that perspective, I think film school does help you that way, to think through all the kinds of perspective and write according to that.
That's actually interesting, because generally when you're writing, at least when I have been writing, I don't really think about how much it would cost for a location, but that's actually quite important when you think about it, because you have the particular cost of that place, but on top of it, you also have other stuff that you might want to add on to the location using the production designer or the art director, which again is an added cost. But do you feel like it's important for you to be on set when the shoot is going on for a project that you're not directing, but something that you've written?
Not really. If you trust the director enough, if you've written it with him, looking through his vision, thinking through his vision, then you don't really have to. Like, only when you don't have trust is when you have to go and keep checking if it's going through what they've discussed back in the day.
But so far, in your experience, you've written with the director?
Yeah, especially Stand Up Rahul was written with the director. He's one of the writers, and he came up with the story himself. Me and this other person in Prashant, he's a writer too from Hyderabad, a very talented guy. So three of us actually wrote down the screenplay. We did our own set of improv because it was stand-up. So a new field for all of us also. So we went to a lot of stand-up shows every day, tried out what kind of things actually tick them. How do they deal with hecklers? These kind of things we had to learn about. So that was quite interesting. And he's one of the people, like Santosh Mohan, his name is the director. So he's someone like we could just trust his vision, because he hasn't changed over time. He fought for the right things with the producer. So we weren't really worried that is he going to ruin it or not. He was just like very trustworthy that way.
This movie's already been shot, is it?
Yeah, it's been shot. It's in editing right now.
Okay. Yeah. Do you feel like there are certain things in a script that make it more sellable to a producer? You did mention thinking about, you know, the locations, but are there other things as well?
that again depends on the production house, honestly. I think another thing a writer is supposed to do is find the right producer. There are some production houses, you just see them and you know what kind of movies they're into. Looking at their resume or looking at even their experimental films. Maybe that producer is, he has identity crisis. Maybe he wants to do some artsy stuff, some parallel cinema stuff, but also a commercial movie to pay his rent and everything else. So he has a bit of both. Just as a writer, I think you need to figure out what kind of producer wants what exactly. There are some producers who like item songs, who want these kind of things. They are a requirement for the people to come in. Because even the people who watch it, they don't get to see this in their real life. Nobody gets to see an item song. We are not like watching it for fun, but it's just about forgetting, I think, the reality and just seeing that for 4 minutes and just, you know, enjoying it, probably. I don't know. I'm not a fan of those personally, but I just try to understand why people enjoy certain kind of films or songs or whatever. So I think some people really like songs, like storytelling through songs, just through actions. And some people don't like songs at all. So it's just about pitching the right producer, I think.
Like when you say this, I think an interesting parallel in my mind would be like finding a right therapist or trying to find a right friend. It goes down to that because when you're making a film, a lot of it is the ideology that you have. And if it doesn't match with the producer, it will cause a lot of issues, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Have you faced anything like that?
Thankfully, like not yet. I just finished writing and directing this story called Swarna. And the producer happens to be Venkatesh Maha, who made Care of Kancharapalam. I know the kind of person he is. So the second he said that he's going to produce it, I knew that I don't have to compromise in certain segments of the story. Because it is quite bold for my life too. I've always wanted to write about things that I'm curious about. I think I write certain subjects to understand it more myself. It's for my own selfish reasons. Not to tell people anything. I think people know enough. It's just for myself that I do. For example, like a short that I made, it's called Left Behind. So that is about left-handers. I just wrote that to understand left-handers more. Because I'm thinking like him for that one moment while writing it. And meeting the actor who's behaving that certain way, it makes me think that I'm being with a left-hander for that 1 week, you know. With Swarna, it was about the subject I wanted to write about is why do some women in rural areas are in a situation where they have to marry their own rapist? That is the subject I was thinking about. Why does that happen and how do they deal with that? And just keep wondering about how a rapist family would deal with it. How do his parents deal with certain situations? We know how a victim's life is, right? We've seen enough movies where a raped woman is the protagonist. Like 15 Park Avenue. That's one of those oldest Konkana Sense films that really stayed with me. But I haven't seen something from a rapist's point of view, from his family's point of view especially. Are they ashamed? Are they in denial? Do they hate their son? Do they love their son? We don't know. So that's why I needed to write something to understand it myself. But yeah, coming to your question, I think Maha was more than like accepting about the story when I pitched it to him. I was a little scared to pitch it even to my parents, but it took me some time to understand it, make it in like a pitch-worthy kind of script, and then tell him, and he was like really happy to produce something like that, I think. Mm. Finding the right producer is like finding a therapist or a friend.
But okay, this is very interesting because you're trying to tell stories of people that you are curious about. A lot of people have told me that it's easiest to write about experiences that you've gone through, like basing a character off some experience that you had and stretching on that. But when you're looking at something like looking at a rapist's point of view, that is something that is so difficult to even imagine. Because, I don't know, it's hard to get into that point of view. So, do you spend your time doing research or do you spend your time thinking about it a lot, trying to feel the way that you think they would feel? And how do you try to get as authentic as possible while writing about something like this?
Yeah, I feel like I met a lot of my friends, writers and everyone who say that we should only write about things we've experienced. We should only write cities where we've lived in. I really don't think so. I feel like you should get to a state, you should practice on a state where you should be able to write about people you've not met at all. Like, I've never met, let's say, the person who washes the bathrooms of a railway station. But I want to write about him someday. Like, what does he go through with that smell, that stench? How does he go home and sleep? You know, these are the things I'm curious about. I guess, like, I don't consciously sit down and say, okay, now 4 hours I need to think about this rapist. I think it's just, like, our brain, I think there's one section which is like a sponge, which just absorbs information somehow. And I might have seen some behavior from somebody in my house or outside I've met, even a traffic police. Maybe he did some signaling that didn't seem right at that moment. And probably I used that to put into a driver's body language in a story. I don't know. Like, I really can't answer that. I don't know where I absorb what, because I don't remember. That's another thing. Like, I think my memory is smaller than my sponge department. Yeah, like, it doesn't make sense logically, but that's how it is for me.
Mm.
There are certain things you notice in your maid, right? But I've never used those behavior patterns. But I just assume what she might be doing after she leaves to her home. How does she chill? What does she watch? I think you can just imagine these kind of behavior.
I feel like it's almost like taking cinematic liberty at that point. Because unless you talk to that person, I feel like getting the true, authentic story might not be possible. But that doesn't stop you from imagining what it's like.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it is necessary. Like, even for Swarna, the father-in-law, I've made him someone who's like, you know, he seems like someone who knows what his son has done, but he's never confronted him. I gave him the kind of behavior who gave up on his son. He's like, he must have done this. He must have raped somebody else too. Like, my son is capable of that and I don't respect him. When you see him, you'll understand that about him.
Mm.
He doesn't have to say it out. And the mother, when you see her, you'll know that she's in denial of her son doing anything. She's like in this blind faith belief on her son. And the wife, on the other hand, she's underaged. And you'll understand that she's just like, her tolerance level has gone way higher than her age itself. So I've never met these kind of people. But somehow, I wanted to write them. Because even the justification of the characteristics should match the person. I can't just write a postman who's angry all the time. I have to justify why he's angry, right?
Yeah.
Like, why someone is so happy, smiling all the time. Why are they so angry? Like, everything needs to come with an explanation, because in life, we give explanations to our loved ones, right? Like, that's how you should treat the audience. They watch your film. They spend 4 hours or 2 hours of their life watching your vision. So
it almost feels like a lot of how we think things are comes from the movies we watch also. So I think even that can be like, good movies can be a good source material. Would you agree to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I spoke about, like, 15 Park Avenue.
Right, right.
That is one movie, like, you see how, like, have you seen that film?
No, I haven't.
So in that, like, basically Konkana Sen meets this guy, Rahul Bose. They date for a bit. They're about to get married. But at that time, one unfortunate incident happens to her and she goes through rape. And that's when he decides to break up with her. So he lives with that guilt for the rest of his life, and she's mentally not all right. Like, she literally becomes like schizophrenic towards the end of the film. So there are issues like that. And I think that movie and several, like, the older films maybe that just stay with you. Like, there's Masoom and like 36 Chaurangi Lane. That's a Bengali film that just shows about how selfish people can be.
Mm.
And not feel bad about it. That's what I've taken from that film.
Right?
Yeah. So it's just simple things. I think the movies that stay with you are the ones you think about for days.
Yeah.
After watching it, you will probably, like I said, that subconscious bubble and that sponge in there, they just absorb all of this and just wondering how to put it out.
I feel like it's when some kind of an emotion really stays with you, it's, you're motivated enough to create a story around that emotion. Right. So when it comes to pitching your story to someone, like, what kind of a process have you gone through?
So Swarna was like a very interesting pitching session for me. because the producers that Maha introduced me to are Americans. So I had to figure out what would please them. So one thing is the rural India. That's every American dream, I guess. Like, they like to see what we are going through.
Yeah.
What are we doing with our cow dung? They want to know these things. So, you know, making a presentation really helps. And I love making presentations, like PPTs. Like, I made a presentation for my wedding. So I'm that kind of person. Like, I want everything to be there. So every department, like even the fact that I needed sync for it specifically, you know, like Nagarjun Thallapalli, the sound designer, is working on it. And I can't be more grateful than that. Just things like that, and what kind of editing, what kind of tone and cinematography. Everything needs to be put together really well, compact and detailed as much as possible. Because any producer, even if it's from Hyderabad or even if he's from Guntur or wherever, if there's more information in it, then he'll understand your vision better. You shouldn't give them too many questions to ask. Everything should be in it already. And verbal pitching, like, try to start your pitching with a question. With Swarna, for example, I would like to ask the producer, like, if you knew someone and they confessed that they are a rapist, how would you treat them? Like, that's something I would like to know. If it's a close friend of yours who you knew all your life and he suddenly confesses that he raped someone, how would you deal with that? Stand up Rahul. The protagonist, Rahul, he's someone who uses comedy as a relief for his insecurities. So I would ask the producer that, is there something that you do with your insecurities? Something that defends that? Like how Chandler uses humor. What do you use? So when you start with a question, I think that's what will get them into it immediately. Hmm. So that is a nice pitching technique that works for me.
Right, right. How do you get in touch with producers in the first place?
Right now, the thing is, like, with Instagram, it became a little easier, I think. You can pitch production houses. Just because it's Annapurna Studios, don't think Suresh Babu will be on Instagram or something and you can message him. But maybe you can find someone who works there.
Right.
You know, you can find them on Instagram. Just a little bit of networking, like, as much as possible. I mean, I'm not really good at networking myself. If you put me in a room, I can't talk immediately. But, like, on Instagram, you can send a message. Hi, I'm doing this. Have, like, a pitch deck ready, like a synopsis, one-liner. All these ready before you approach someone. Finding people through that. Don't just waste your time, I think, going to a production house and just waiting there with a bound script in your hand, because that never worked out. I don't think it'll work out now in this era that we are in. Third thing is, get your script registered at the earliest, because I've heard a lot of horror stories where the stories were taken and not given credit. Those kind of things do happen and people should be careful.
Right. Yeah. When it comes to, you know, directing your first, would it be fair to say major project with Swarna?
Kind of, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when it comes to that, what kind of a conversation do you have with your producer? Like, once the production has started, are there back and forths where, you know, there's any signs of insecurity or to make sure that things are going fine?
Yeah. So especially for Swarna, like, Maha was not on set because the shoot was in Nizamabad and this was shot during COVID last year.
Okay.
During the first wave. So that happens to be my hometown, and it got things a little more simpler for me because I have relatives there who are willing to help and all these things. With him, I just wanted to make sure of two things, which was, I wanted sync sound and the cinematography. That was something which was a little important for me based on how the story is, you know, how the lighting is supposed to be. I wanted a lot of natural lighting. So I didn't want too many lights, too much equipment on set. It had to be, like, as simple as possible. So things like, you know, generator, keeping the generator a little away from the house, getting a sync sound person on set. And all these things, I think those were spoken about in our first conversation itself. Once those are cleared up, you don't have to keep following up. Things can be done easier in terms of communication. Just be as honest as possible, I think, about in the first go itself. And you'll know immediately in the first meeting if this producer is going to change or make you compromise.
Right.
So I think that instinct we are all born with, and we should just take that as important as possible. Just, like, listen and you know, just get the point. If this is not working out, keep the script with you again. Pitch it to somebody else who gets this, who doesn't have to make you compromise. So I think that will happen. It's like dating somebody, right? Like finding a partner. Just wait, hold on till you find the right one.
Did you ever feel nervous going on to the set at all? Because deciding on what to do at what time to do with so many things going on and this being your first major project, which is being bankrolled by someone else. Did you ever feel that?
Yeah, absolutely. The first scary experience for me was when I came back from the US. I worked there for 2 years and somehow the US makes you feel more comfortable on set because everybody behaves like they don't know enough. Nobody behaves like they're the smartest person in the room. They all are like willing to learn somehow. As soon as you say India, they're like, wow, that's so exotic and shit. But like the conversation gets easier there for some reason. So when I came here, the first set I went on to was a series, a TV series. So that one was kind of on a high budget. That was a little scary for me, like the first day especially, because I was the only woman on set. And all the other ADs around were far more experienced. And so it was scary for me to even ask a stupid question. So it took me some time to get that courage to ask questions, to say, I don't know, which is very important. Like anyone who wants to be an AD, learn to say, I don't know. It's fine. If you nod your head and go and you ask someone else the same question, they don't have time to answer your question. Yeah. They're doing their own thing. So nobody has time to like take care of your things. So the more questions you ask, I think that's how we learn things. We weren't scared to ask our mom when we were kids. So we shouldn't be even now. So it took me some time to get comfortable on that set, especially. Yeah. Everyone being experienced, I think it's how you deal with those relationships too. And how polite you are. And under pressure, how polite you are. That's very important.
Yeah.
Because it's easier to snap than explain to somebody with patience. So those kind of things matter. And it just takes like a series of sets to, I think, get used to that kind of behavior and understand your own self.
Yeah. And I also feel like when you're in that kind of an atmosphere, you get snapped at very often as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Just for the most random questions, like you didn't get the script kind of a thing. And you'll assume there'll already be a script on set. But you have to bring your own. Just small, tiny details like this. And just figuring out if somebody is doing the slate, like the clapboard, and if they didn't erase it and put the right shot number, and that's your first time, then you're screwed that day. You're like so nervous, you'll be like stammering. So I've seen people like that. And I've done clapboard in the US. That was my first experience, first job on set. And it was the scariest shit. Even if it's just a shoot with friends, you get nervous because you want to be perfect. Mm. And that is the kind of pressure I think we put on ourselves, which is not fair, you know, to perform. Like, I think we all do that to ourselves. Like, I want to be as experienced as Maniratnam. Like, that took him years to get there, right? It took him a decade or decades to get to that comfort level. So I think we should just like take time with ourselves and start shooting with your own friends who you don't mind failing in front of.
Yeah.
I think that's very important. Just work with people who don't know much about filmmaking, just like you, and learn together and then start working with more professional people and then like step by step, basically.
And how is that different from when you are in charge?
In charge. So again, I made a lot of PPTs for every department. So it just gets things easier, I think. And I choose to sit with every department, every head, and make sure they understand the story full-fledged. Even the ADs to the sound guys to the production assistants. Everybody has to know what is happening in the story. Don't just come and fix the lights. That's never done happily. Because they should sit and watch the scene and be like, oh, so this is how it happens. There was one guy who was the assistant cinematographer and he didn't want to read the story. He never reads. He said, I want to figure it out during the shoot. So the last scene happened in Swarna and it's the monologue. And that's when he understood the story because we did that scene the third day of the shoot. So there are people like that on set also, who want to understand it over time. But otherwise, the main heads, I like to sit with them, spend time as much as possible, explain everything. We get on set and all you need is like a gesture and they get it. You should get to that level of communication comfort zone, I feel. Like that's how it can work for me.
I feel like every person on the crew ideally should think of the movie as their own. But the problem is that, I wouldn't call it a problem. When that happens, they have their own ideas of how the film can be in their department. And it might not necessarily match with you. Either theirs can be better or what you have in mind is better. Have you faced that kind of a situation?
Yeah, especially on that series, I've realized that there were a bunch of ADs on that, okay? More than the actors, I think the ADs were more. So everyone were handling one department and everyone were just commenting on how the show could be better. At first, it was new for me, that kind of environment where everyone is voicing their opinion. I've not seen that in the US. Everyone just follows the director blindly, however bad or good the film is going to turn out. But here, I've seen everybody just voicing their opinions like that when we all just chill like this. And I found that a little wrong in terms of, you know, there is firstly the producer's pressure the director has, which the ADs don't have. They don't give a shit. It doesn't matter to them. He needs to keep thinking about the music and the sound and everything else. There are too many things in a director's head for him to think like an AD. And that's when I've realized everyone does come with their own opinion and their own perspective of filmmaking itself. If tomorrow Anurag Kashyap has to make Coolie number one, it'll be dark as hell, or it could be happy or dark comedy itself. We don't know. So it's just, I think it's easier to say, oh, I could have done the scene better. It's like saying, you know, somebody's skating at Olympics and you saying, I can do better than her when you don't know how to skate. So it's things like that. I think when only when the responsibility is on your shoulders, you'll know how it is.
Yeah. But I'm also talking specifically about, let's say, for example, there is a particular sequence of shots and there is a certain way that you want the composition to be like, the frame to be like, whereas the cinematographer thinks it has to be in some other way. In that kind of a situation, how do you, especially if you're working with someone more experienced than you, it is again a different dynamic that you both have. So how do you try to get the best of both ideas? Do you try to find something that is in between, or do you go with what you think is the better idea?
So for Swarna, like the cinematographer, he is Haricharan. He's actually like more experienced than I am. He's done shows in Bombay and everything else. He's worked in Bollywood. We spent a lot of time before the shoot even started. But there were certain things, you know, you see the set and you know that this can be done differently today. Let's change it a bit. We've made a shortlist and everything. But there are some scenes where you see the location based on the light and everything else. Oh, so this can work like a montage. In times like that, it was very interesting to get his perspective too. Like, I am very accepting of ideas. I think in general also, I like to listen more than I can speak, kind of a person. So when he speaks and tells me, you know, this can work, I know the way his brain works, like a cinematographer's mind, I think. It works only through picture and, you know, how he wants it to look. And it is working for the film only. Like, he got the tone of the film already. He's not saying, let's just shoot some happy kid. Because that's not the tone of the film we are going at. I think for me, it is getting the best of both worlds. Like, let's shoot both and then decide when we are editing it. It's that kind of a thing for me.
Makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, because on the editing table, the story is completely different again. You want to go from past to present or present to past, it depends on you. So that kind of a thing. I like to do both.
So you like to have choices when you're editing?
Not choices, but in times like this, like how you asked,
right,
if the
right.
DOP says on set, why don't we shoot that for a montage? Let's do another sunset shot. So I don't know if I'll use that. But it's fine to have. If it's not wasting time or making an actor wait, then we can shoot it.
Right. I mean, this, you mentioned sunset and this that reminded me of this quote. I don't remember. Some director said that it doesn't matter which film school you've gone to, but on the first day of shoot, you're nearing sunset and you have 20 shots to go. Yeah. that's a point where nothing that you've learned prior to this is going to help.
Yeah.
And you need to improvise. Have you had situations like that?
I think that was Tarantino.
Tarantino, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not
like
sure.
Something
either.
Like yeah. that. I mean, yeah, with Swarna and with Left Behind, both especially, because we wanted to shoot that in 2 days. It was a weekend shoot.
Wait, Swarna was shot in 2 days?
Not Swarna. Left Behind was two days.
Right.
And that we had a lot of pressure with. There was one time we wanted to do a Dutch shot, the Dutch angle, and the other one was the Vertigo shot. So these two, especially the Vertigo, we needed a different set of lens. And those lens didn't arrive at all, like that previous night, as we were promised. So we didn't get the lens, and I didn't want to compromise on that shot. So I wanted to get the lens somehow. And I don't know what my first AD did. Next day, early morning at 4 a.m., they delivered it. And America is so scared of bad reviews. So they said, you don't have to pay for it. So that never happens. I don't think that will happen ever again in my life. Like, that's on a different level of luck.
And like, I've been on sets where things come very late and then they ask for payment immediately. Like, yeah. The amount of audacity people have can be quite irritating.
Yeah. So that's one thing. With Swarna, there was time constraint. Especially the father-in-law, who's played by Ramalu. His character's name is Ramalu. So he's someone like after 6 o'clock, he gets very restless. He has his own set of rituals to do. He has to have a drink. And he drinks gin, by the way. He has to have his drink and go for coffee with his friends, for chai with his friends, and watch the news. These are the things he needs to do. If he doesn't get to do them, then he can't participate. So he was very clear with that on day one. There were some important scenes that didn't happen because he had to go, so they had to get pushed for the next day. So it's things like that. He's very serious about his rituals. That's when the real filmmaking comes out.
Yeah. On the subject of actors, what kind of a collaboration do you have with them?
So with Left Behind, that person was very experienced, actually. He's done a bunch of shows. He was in the show called Shameless.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, his name is Jimmy McCammon. He was too experienced for me to, like, he didn't need too much information. He read the script. I gave him a brief about the backstory of the character, and he's understood. He did a fabulous job. But with Swarna, all of them are non-actors. So Ramalu is a farmer. The mother-in-law is, she's a homemaker. And Swarna, who's played by Swarna, she works as a maid. Three of them were like completely different backgrounds itself. They don't know what film is, what a camera looks like. They just know the camera in the smartphone. That's about it. So when they saw the camera setup, all three of them just went to the camera and they were staring at it and trying to touch it. Like some alien came into the village or something. So it was very interesting with them. I spent like almost 2 months doing sort of like a workshop with them, where I wanted to understand what's their view on the subject rape, like what is their point of view on that. And three of them had very interesting points about it. So Ramalu, for some reason, I didn't feel like getting too deep into the subject. So I just gave him the scenes and he did the scenes. He got to know what the story is about on the day of the monologue. And that's how I wanted to keep it for him, because I felt like he didn't need to know the story. Like, he should be as oblivious. And that's when his performance actually came true. I was playing a game with him there. Like, it was like an experiment, which kind of worked out for me. With the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law, I needed to tell them the story, because first I need to know if they are capable of believing in such a story, firstly, as people, as individuals. And secondly, are they okay with this kind of a subject to be associated with them? And thirdly, like, there were a lot of dialogues for them both especially. She had like a 2-page monologue. I was really surprised how three of them learned their lines. Like, they all would come with homeworks, almost like line script and stuff. Mm. They wrote it in Telugu and brought it into the set. And they would just practice it outside when we are setting up lights. So I could see that these guys, they didn't need to go to an acting school. They just run on instinct. And that's how acting should be, right? Mm. Like, it was just very interesting to see how they work, and they develop their own methods of acting. Ramalu would just go for a walk and come, and he would get into character. And I'm just like, who is this guy? Like, he's like some Anthony Hopkins or what? Like, what the hell is going on? So it was kind of like a delight to work with them. Like, I actually miss them. and I'm just going there. So I do keep thinking about them.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds really interesting because I do know that casting non-actors can work wonderfully, but I've never really thought about the process that they might actually go through. Did you have a casting process for them?
Yeah, so initially I actually wanted to go to Nizamabad and contact all the theatre companies and get theatre actors. I've met a few, I didn't like them at all. Theatre in rural cities, for some reason, they do overreact a bit to things. It's very loud, it's very like Mahabharata, Ramayanam, they do those kind of things, right?
Yeah.
So it's not really sober. And I needed like really sober people. Ramlu also, it's funny, I actually met him on the street. I saw him and I was like, this is the guy. He is Ramlu, A to Z. I want him because he looks like he gave up on life. Like he's so cynical even as a person. It's funny. If I talk about COVID, he's like, yeah, we're all going to die anyway. Like that's his tagline, you know. So, and I needed someone like that for that character. And the mother-in-law, she has like a resting bitch face and it works for her, for the film. So I think casting also has this, that person should have like an innate behavior to begin with. And then you can add slices and layers into them. I think the base should be strong, like a cake, right? Like, and then you can just add layers and toppings and everything.
I feel like when you say toppings, I really feel like the way you've told about these actors, they probably by themselves have added a lot to the characters.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Like the way Ramlu lights up his cigarette, and it's not even a cigarette, it's like a bidi, but it has tobacco in it. Like he rolls them himself.
Okay.
So that is something which he brought in himself to the character. And I wanted that to be a part of it. There's a shot like where he smokes and his matchbox looks damn cool. Like it has 54 or something written on it. It's an old school matchbox company apparently.
Okay.
So that looks damn nice. I was like, can we use this? And he said, do what you want. Like he really doesn't give a shit. Like he's like, do what you want. I'll just smoke my thing. Hari was just running the camera and that worked for that scene. So it was damn interesting and three of them bring something to it.
Yeah. I feel like with trained actors, at least if you go with the majority of them, you have this kind of neutrality in who they portray. Like they look at what the director wants and what they add is probably not as much because they've trained themselves to be flexible. Whereas if you're looking at non-actors who you're choosing for a particular role, there's so much more that they can add.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Like, unfortunately or what, there are some actors who don't change at all in movies. Like, I feel like their behavior is the same in every film and that's become their signature. You know, that's become their style of saying the dialogue. They don't even want to think that, okay, I'm an accountant in this film. Maybe I should sound a little different based on my financial status. Just working on dialect is not enough. There's a lot with body language and the way you use your hands, especially those kind of basics. With these guys, I was just surprised that they understood what sync is, sync sound is, and they know when to be silent. And those were not the things we had to sit down and tell them.
I feel like it's easier for someone who's not been in the industry to understand what sync sound is.
Yeah.
Because that's the easiest way to think about it.
Correct, correct. Very true. And them just memorizing the lines really surprised me because I don't think I can memorize lines myself, even if I wrote it, right?
Yeah.
Like it's like theater. It was damn fascinating to, I think, work with them.
Man, I wish I was on the Swarna set.
Yeah, I would have loved to have you, man.
Very fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully the next one.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Before we go on, I want to talk about the sponsors of this episode, Violet Hill Films. Violet Hill Films is a production house based out of Hyderabad who offer audiovisual services. They have an experienced team who have worked on a variety of ad films, music videos, product photography, award-winning short films, and documentaries. You can contact Violet Hill Films on Instagram or on their website at violethillfilms.com. The link to both of which will be in the description. Every single film set that I've been on has had like very few women. 5 or 6. Sometimes I've been on set where there's like 1, 2 or even no women. And you've probably been in such a situation more times than you can probably count.
Yeah.
How does that play out? Because I haven't addressed this on the podcast before because I feel like it is kind of sexist to ask a woman about what it is like to be a woman and not talk about the work. But since I haven't addressed it, I think this might be a good chance for me to do it.
Yeah. So one thing that really bothers me about what's happening right now is they are purposely looking for female ADs suddenly. And that's because they hire them and I feel like they give them like the creative side of things. They just think that they know costumes and production design. They're
and
like,
actors.
You know, she's a girl. She'll figure it out. She'll know how the actress should dress like. I'm like, no, like even the man should be able to know what a nun would wear, right? Like everybody should know. It has nothing to do with gender. So for me, it felt like that, like the departments that were given to mainly females and also like an experience of how an intimate scene was treated. I was supposed to like convey it to the actress because she would be more comfortable hearing it from a woman. For some reason, like the director wasn't like comfortable enough to speak to the actress about what she's supposed to do in that scene. And in the script, it's not written. In the script, it's just that they get intimate and that's it. It's like one line.
It's so important to be so descriptive on the script, regardless of what it is.
Exactly. You know, that's why in the US, there's an intimacy coordinator hired for that. We don't have that yet. It was very awkward. I could see him being awkward telling her, but he was comfortable telling the male actor. So it had to be mutually told at the same time. So that wasn't happening. And because I was the only woman, it was going through me and I didn't feel good at the end of it.
Right, yeah.
Like, have lesser people on set, firstly. Don't give information through somebody else. Do it yourself.
Especially
like
when your actor is in such a vulnerable state, right?
Yeah, and it's a normal thing. It's a normal scene if you treat it normally. Don't make it a big deal, right? That day was very, like, uncomfortable for me as a person. And, yeah.
Do you feel like on a day-to-day basis, because I don't know if it's fair for me to say it, but I've been on sets where most sets that I've been on, the number of women are very few. Film industry is such. While the people are really nice, and I wouldn't say they are blatantly sexist, but there are few things, like few words that they say that might come off as, you know, mildly sexist or casually sexist, which I've seen very often. In fact, I've been on a set where the cinematographer was so blatantly sexist and the actor was so uncomfortable, but there's nothing that she could have done about it. Like, I've had a conversation with her months after that happened, and that's when I realized that I wasn't the only one noticing it. But nobody speaks about these things on set and it continues.
Yeah, and I don't think the person who's sexist also realizes it, because I don't think ever anybody's ever corrected him or her. Like, even women I've seen are quite sexist. Like, they say like those things should be lifted by a man. Like, maybe they are good at lifting it, but there are things which are differentiated that way on set. Gaffers are all men. Light men are all men for a reason. Women are all in the feminine creative things like costume, production design, all this stuff. I don't think that can be mixed up, the light men thing. Even in the US, actually, I've seen women lifting lights.
Yeah.
Like, I've lifted lights in my film school. It's not that difficult. You can hold that weight, basically, of C-stands and all that stuff. It's just too differentiated here, I feel. It's broader.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why we have such less female cinematographers. It's like 5% or so.
I don't think it's just cinematography. I feel it's across all departments.
Across.
Yeah,
I think I'm just being more specific. But sexism does exist. But I don't think the person saying it realizes it. And someone just holding an argument on set doesn't help. Like, it should be something that should happen more organically, like in the situation, hiring more women, things like that. Not
I think
purposely.
That's the simplest way to go forward.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Like, on set, there's no gender, man. You should just get the work done. So once they know that there's no difference between these two people, then they should just give them the work and make it happen. Just one thing that really bothers me about movies is like the friends of actors, the friends of the protagonist. Like, they're so like, no opinions, man. Like, come on, I'm not that kind of friend at all to my friends. And nobody is. Like, I really like the friend in Arjun Reddy. That was nice.
Yeah, I think the friend was the only nice character in yeah. the entire movie.
Yeah. So, I like friends like that. Like, I think the friend will really show more elements to the protagonist more than the protagonist himself. His sense of humor. What does he watch? What kind of porn he watches? Like, details like this. You know, I think backstory is very important that way. Just right from the person's childhood, everything. The first time he was bullied or he bullied someone. All these kind of details. What is their social life like? How is he at a party? Is he a talker or the corner standing guy who just has a drink in his hand? Or is he just someone who has a small group of friends? So these things really matter to understand the character better. Mm. Instead of just making him an extrovert in every film. You know, or a major introvert for some reason. There's no middle ground. And I think I fall in the middle ground and I never see myself in movies. Like, I can't That's relate true. To them.
Yeah.
I think we have that middle ground thing, which I've not really seen.
Actually, yeah. I feel like even I fall in the middle ground and there has not been a single film where I've seen that. Like, there's this Kannada movie called Diya.
Diya, okay.
And it's about, I hated the movie, like the sensibilities and all are very nice. Like, I'm sure that the director is a very nice guy.
Yeah.
But, okay, that's a completely different point. But even that is about a complete introvert and there is no exploration of the in-between.
Mm.
At least not in most mainstream cinema. So I guess we can end it here.
Yeah, yeah? Awesome.
So thank you so much for giving your time.
Thank
and
you.
Coming
thank you
here.
For having
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
That's the end of this episode. I hope you had a good time listening to it. This episode has been edited by NC Vineet and the music has been composed by Rohit Tambulwadikar. Creating this podcast takes up a lot of time and resources. And you could help us by becoming a patron with as less as $3 or around 200 rupees every month. This gives you access to ad-free episodes, shoutouts, behind the scenes, and a lot of other exclusive content. Head over to patreon.com/haveimadeityet. Also, make sure to follow us on Instagram for regular updates, the link to which is in the description. Thank you.
Action. Have I made it yet?